code's Kill Kittens and customer service is an oxymoron. One podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
On today's episode, it's going to be a food show, but we were just talking before we went on air about things that annoy the heck out of us.
Of us?
Yeah.
Us. Mm-hmm. Is that
what annoys me about you? Or annoys you about me?
Be careful.
No, me about you? You know what I find annoying?
Be careful.
Nothing. Nothing annoys me.
No.
Except what you're doing right now.
Twirling my hair?
No, I like that.
You like when I twirl my hair?
Yeah. I do. It's the nice show. With Allison and Scott. Welcome. I'm just kidding.
No one's going to listen.
We're going to rip some stuff apart. But it is like a food episode, if the dog would stop scratching for a second. Thank you, Lola. Appreciate that. We have on the show today a very special guest, our dogs. Oh, and Aiden. Aiden's here too. Our millennial man, our correspondent, our audio assistant, beside the man who knows it all, the Gandalf to our audio, the Arnold Schwarzenegger to our predator, Wayne, or formerly known as Wayne-O. We ditched it. We ditched the nickname. Only let us that an episode or two. We're out. Aiden needs a nickname now. Dragon.
That's the first thing you thought of?
Yeah, Dragon.
Dragon was the first thing you thought of?
Is that, no? You don't like Dragon? A-ball. No. That's a
Jacob's nickname.
Well, yeah, J-balls. Yeah, that's
J-balls. For him.
But that's B-A-W-L-Z. All right. Well, we'll put a pin in it. We'll get back to it. All right. So before we get into the food fight, pretty much extraordinaire for the whole episode, I'm going to get you a little story. I was perusing, if I may, on LinkedIn, a site that I've become much more involved in over the past 6 months, and finally gotten to the point where I find it's got a social aspect to it when it's been lumped into social media for a decade now. And it actually has a social part to it to me, where the people are, you're posting comments and stories and videos and everything else. So I've been enjoying it, spending a lot of my focus on it, a lot away from Facebook on a business side of things, like the unmarketing page, and more on LinkedIn. So I'm connected with Duncan Barreau, who's the president of Air Canada Rouge, which you'd think I'd not be friends with, but he was a former WestJet exec. And he had posted something about his visit. And so he says, today I experienced something that was remarkable I need to share. I, along with my team, are hosting a number of partners at Wynn Las Vegas, and as usual, it's busy with lots of people moving around the lobby, and of course, all the crew working to maintain and service guests. So I'm standing right in the middle of the hallway as a gentleman was using a very large vacuum to clean the halls of this magnificent hotel. I saw him approaching us, so I encouraged my team to move out of his way. Then something remarkable happened. Wes, his name, turned off the vacuum cleaner and said the following, "Excuse me, sir. As long as I am working in this amazing hotel, you will always have the right of way. You never need to move out of my way. Where are you from? Are you enjoying your stay? Is there anything I can do for you? Thank you for staying with us at the Wynn. I hope that you have a great stay, and we're looking forward to seeing you again." He goes on to say, "Tourism at its core is customer service. No matter what your role is in any company, you can make a difference as a brand ambassador. I was so impressed that I then shared this story with over 20 CEOs I'm hosting here. Wes is welcome to join any team I'm a part of." Funny thing, Wes...
We have a Wes story.
...is our opening story in unmarketing. The first story ever read in a book that we put out was Wes. The Wes. This Wes. Still at the Wynn. We put the story on unmarketing. The book blew up. Wes then wins Employee of the Year that year at the Wynn, and he credits us with that because of it was in the book. We blogged about him. The first blog post he did on marketing was about Wes. Same exact story. He stopped what he was doing with the same floor cleaner machine and said, "Whatever you're in town for, I hope it's a wonderful day." And it stopped you in your tracks. So I comment on this story. Oh my God, it's Wes. And I talked about how we did it in the book. And we sent a copy to Duncan, the book. A week later, I get a message on LinkedIn. "Hey Scott, it's Wes. I just wanted to thank you for posting on Duncan's post about it and for when you wrote a story about me. I am the only 3-time winner of the Employee of the Month for the Wynn," because they employ, you know, a jillion, upwards of tens of thousands of people at the place. So the question is, of course, with Wes is, should he have a promotion by this point? And should he be running the place? The Wynn brand could use a hand.
We don't want to assume. Like, we don't know him. He might be perfectly happy where he is. But I think it's great that they've been rewarding him. And I hope even if, like, let's say he's happy with his job and he doesn't want to change positions, I hope at least they're using him as a training tool, like, for other people should know.
I still remember meeting him. And he said, by the next time we go, please tell him we're there. We'll come say hi.
Awesome.
So, Wes, keep doing you. Keep being you, man. The world needs more of you. So just, you're awesome.
Ready to do some food stuff?
Let's eat it up.
I love the title of this article. It's from the New York Post. It says, "Man says he was tricked into buying diet ice cream." A man with a discriminating sweet tooth is suing a low-calorie ice cream maker, claiming he sampled it, thinking it was the real deal because of its misleading packaging. Uh-huh. Josh Berger bought a pint of diet brand Halo Top in 2017 under the impression that it was regular ice cream because of its false, deceptive, and misleading labeling. He charges in a suit filed against the parent company, Eden Creamery, in Brooklyn Federal Court Thursday. When Bergen dug into the $7 pint, he was bummed to find it was harder and less creamy than regular ice cream he was hoping for. Regular ice cream is required to have at least 10% milk fat, while Halo Top's dairy flavors have less than 5%, the lawsuit notes. Berger said he was tricked because the legally required light ice cream label, while included on the container, was small and obscure relative to the other company's health brands. It says reasonable consumers are not aware that they're purchasing light ice cream and therefore sue. It's so weird. Like, he must have nothing else going on, like, stressful in his life. Because, like, what this is, like, this is the hill that he's decided to put his planter on, that he once, the story is basically he once bought something for $7 and it wasn't exactly what he wanted. That's the entire story.
It's not even that it was labeled wrong. It was just misleading to him.
It was small.
Yeah.
That's the whole story. He can't possibly have any other concerns. But can you imagine that? It
hurts.
Like, how many times? It's not like he once bought something for $7 million and it was the wrong thing.
It would be like somebody downloading this show and expecting a real show. So you don't get what you thought. That's not our fault. It's not our fault. We've never claimed it. Please don't sue us in Brooklyn Federal Court. All right. This is from our crew at convinceandconvert.com. Jay Bayer and Company says, "When your great customer experience drives your employees crazy. Hick's Law states that the more choices we face, the harder it is for us to make a selection. Perhaps best explained in the terrific book, The Paradox of Choice by Barry Schwartz. Hick's Law is why you stand slack-jawed when trying to make a cereal selection at Kroger. Too many kinds. Increasingly, we try to shortcut our decision-making by relying upon aggregate opinions of other people who have already experienced the things we seek." It's like Yelp, TripAdvisor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just trying to get to the middle part of this.
Was it Godin that has that great TED? It was a TED Talk, wasn't it? About choice and that it actually, I don't know if it's, I might be misquoting who it is though. It might not be Godin.
We'll look into it.
Yeah. And it was actually saying that you needed choice, that it led to more purchases.
Yes. So it's a long-held maxim that companies that deliver a good customer experience typically also provide a good employee experience. And he says, like, Southwest, Ritz-Carlton, et cetera. He says, a new research project from Brain Trust Insights, demonstrates how this can happen, this time at Olive Garden restaurants. Brain Trust Insights is a new consultancy. The firm is led by Christopher S. Penn, who's also a friend of ours. So, for this project, Chris and his team digitally ingested, using IBM Watson Analytics, over 2,500 Glassdoor reviews of Olive Garden, the prominent 844-location Italian food restaurant chain owned by Darden Restaurants Group. Across all reviews, the company has an average score of 3.5 out of 5 as of April 2018. 64% of workers would recommend the company to a friend, and 76% approve of the company's CEO. These numbers are pretty solid for a national restaurant chain. In comparison, Outback and Cheesecake Factory average 3.6, and Chili's maintains a 3.4. Despite the generally positive remarks, Olive Garden should seek to improve the experience and attitude of its employees for three reasons. One, happier employees provide better service, improving customer retention and profit. Two, employee churn is a colossal expense for all restaurants, costing millions of dollars in training costs for a chain as large as Olive Garden and reducing the on-floor experience and expertise of the staff due to turnover. Three, in a tight labor market, remaining fully staffed may be easier if Olive Garden could meaningfully creep ahead of competitors in the average Glassdoor score. So, it's worth it to move from relative contentment to genuine happiness within the employee ranks at Olive Garden. And the analysis shows that this is actually occurring already. Negative comments and low review scores among employees have dipped consistently since 2014. But more can and should be done. And how? Change the free breadsticks policy. You may know that a signature Olive Garden experience is breadsticks delivered to your table once you're seated. And one of the most popular menu items is the $11.99 unlimited soup, salad, and breadsticks combo. Restaurant patrons love the breadsticks. Many employees loathe it. And the data shows this to be true, as many team members leaving Glassdoor reviews specifically mention that the breadsticks in particular set them up to fail because they are either constantly having to refill the breadsticks basket or because the breadsticks are decidedly less tasty when they sit for a few minutes. Specific comments include, you are nothing but a breadstick slave, and unlimited salad and breadsticks sucks. Operationally, Olive Garden has to balance the rampant, almost cultish popularity of the soup, salad, breadsticks combination, which spurs nearly 80% of all social chatter about the brand, according to Penn, and the companion fact that the very thing customers love is also driving dissatisfaction among team members. This is a classic game theory quandary. What does it require to recruit new customers consistently if you do not have the breadsticks offer, and how does that compare with the costs and impacts of a partially dissatisfied workforce?
There'd be an uproar if they stopped doing those breadsticks. There has to be another way to make their employees happy.
Yeah,
there has to be. There'd be. It's like the most popular thing they have. It doesn't make sense.
There are two lessons here. First, in our heightened zeal to provide better customer experiences is usually a good thing. We may trigger unintended consequences. And second, the application of machine learning to peer into previously opaque data sets and derive insights is useful and interesting in many contexts. I guess there's no such thing as free lunch, even if it's just breadsticks.
You have to weigh it against what people
want. But fascinating too, right? Like the thing that actually had the numbers to show that breadsticks are driving employees bananas. I saw a thread on Reddit last night about servers who, when you ask to put Parmesan cheese on something and they ask you, say when, what's the longest that a server has gone? And one of the servers at Olive Garden was like three blocks of cheese.
It's amazing.
Went through three blocks of cheese on somebody's soup.
I know, but it's like saying like somebody at Starbucks complaining about having to like put the foam on the latte. And you're like, but that's why people go to Starbucks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, you wouldn't have a job.
You can't, you can't possibly like weigh those two things against each other.
Yeah, I get it. But damn, those breadsticks are good. Right? And the
salad?
That's
like the first thing I remember. There used to be an Olive Garden near where my high school was.
There was
back
one here
when
too.
There was one in Canada. Yeah. And it's one of the first times I remember as like, I was probably like 12 or 13 going out for lunch with two friends by myself, like with no adults. And it was soup, salad, and breadsticks. That's what I could afford.
$12
and
unlimited.
Probably a water.
I like that salad too.
Yeah,
that's
I
a good
love salad.
We have a friend of ours, Dave and Allison, they drive over the border. They're right in the States because Olive Garden isn't in Canada anymore. And they drive over just and they buy like the salad dressing. They drive over just for dinner, but they pick it up to go and drive back home over the border again. That's how good it is. And the taste of Italy, it's really good. I dig it.
I'm fascinated by why you picked this article. I would like to dive into the why behind.
It's the greatest headline ever.
Why I have an article in front of me from shape.com
mm-hmm.
that says five foods you can cook in your dishwasher. Like, why? Like, okay,
it's
so
the most ridiculous article in history.
When I'm thinking about articles for the podcast, I think about, you know, consumer advocacy articles and business articles and, you know, things that, you know.
This is both.
How is this consumer advocacy?
It's the most ridiculous article I've ever seen, trying to get consumers to cook things in their dishwasher. And as a business, it's not a good business.
Did a dishwasher company put this out?
I don't know. It's just phenomenal.
You just made all of that up. Like, you just put a sentence together of words that meant nothing.
But it's a real article.
I see that it's a real article, but...
Allison, what are the five foods I can cook? I'm really interested in that.
Oh, my gosh. You wouldn't eat... Well, you eat one of these foods.
Which ones?
Well, okay, I'll list the five foods.
Yeah.
You tell me which one of them you would eat.
Yeah.
Asparagus.
No.
Green beans.
No.
Salmon.
No.
Lobster.
No.
Chicken. All right, so
you cooking chicken in the dishwasher?
That's what it says. It says place a thin, skinless chicken breast in a half quarter mason jar with a cup of white wine. Who has both white wine to put on their chicken and wants to cook in their dishwasher? I want to see that group of people. Then add water until the chicken is covered by an inch. Wash and go. And try not to think too much about poultry juices commingling with your water glasses. You don't cook the food in the dishes.
No. This is cooking while you're also cleaning dishes.
No, it's not.
Yes.
It's not. It is? One sec, let me read the beginning. If there's one thing we love, it's efficiency. So a whole meal we can cook inside the dishwasher while getting the goo off our cereal bowls. Ew, you're cooking chicken in the dishwasher while you're doing the dishes?
And now we see why I picked the article.
Asparagus. Trim quarter pound of asparagus.
Asparagi?
Asparagus. Pat of butter. It's basically just boiling. I mean, a dishwasher is just hot water, so if it's sealed and no soap gets on it, you're basically boiling your food.
Yeah, really, which by the way,
not the tastiest way to make chicken. Boiling it inside a mason jar with water and wine is not the tastiest way to make chicken. You ever had boiled chicken? It's not delicious. It's rubbery. Same idea, just add lemon and dill. Get the recipe. Please don't put raw chicken in your dish. Okay, wait, let's read lobster in case we want to do something fancy. Ready? The ultimate dishwasher masterpiece. Cut a deveined, deshelled lobster. So the lobster is not in its,
that's terrible.
It's whatever you call it. It's, what is it called? Exoskeleton or whatever. Mm. You take all the meat, raw lobster meat, which I don't think is easy to get out. Usually you cook it inside for a reason, out. Cut it, the tail in half. Find out how to crack it open here. Oh, a link. Thank you. Then place it in a mason jar. Wow, these people have a lot of mason jars.
I think this is sponsored by mason jars.
With this stick of unsalted butter, run through a wash cycle and invite your friends over for dishwasher lobster rolls.
Why would you use unsalted butter?
Out of all that, Wayne, that's where you got a problem.
Is for my lobster, I want unsalted butter on that thing? Yeah.
Well.
Depends.
You gotta take it
I
up failed
the
to dry
see
cycle.
How this is an unpodcast article. That's first. Let's start there.
This is perhaps the greatest unpodcast article we've ever had.
If this was content marketing, a dishwasher company put this out and said, "We're not just a dishwasher; we're also a stove."
Sous vide.
That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, but it's like a bargain basement version of sous vide.
What is the actual purpose of this? Is this supposed to save energy?
Yeah, it's efficient. You're already running the dishwasher.
Oh, yeah. Might as well cook.
Yeah.
I used to feed the kids dinner in the bathtub because they'd be in the bath already and I'd just feed them dinner and then it was
I ate dinner in the bathtub yesterday. Yeah. It's great.
This is weird.
I had chicken fingers
in
the tub.
All right, well, I guess I'll just not make the lasagna I already made and we'll have some mason jar chicken for dinner with some green beans. Gross.
Amazing.
And completely unrelated to the podcast.
Amazing. About food. Food episode. Our producer took a month off.
To be fair, we decided it was a food episode 8 seconds before we started talking.
Done.
It wasn't like you were on the hunt
Seven
for food
Seven seconds
articles.
Ahead of when we usually were. We were ahead of
do
schedule.
Do you want to do this last article?
Sure. I chucked my other article. Didn't want to do it. CNN.com.
Threw it out the window? Yep.
Out we go. Made an executive decision. The power's going to my head. Trouble in big food. America's cereal, soda, and soup companies are in turmoil. Do we call it soda? Is that what we call it? What do we call it? Pop? Yeah. Sorry, guys. It's not soda. It's pop. And it's not soda pop. Just so y'all know. All right. General Mills, Campbell Soup, Hershey, and Pepsi are all failing to convince investors they have a plan to navigate shoppers' changing tastes. The consumer staples sector is at the back of the pack in the S&P 500, down 13% this year. It's on track for its worst year in a decade. On Friday, Campbell's plunged 12%, its worst day since 1999, after CEO Denise Morrison abruptly retired. Campbell announced a review of its entire lineup, including soup, leaving the door open for breaking up the 149-year-old company. It's part of a broader problem. Large consumer good brands lost market share to small competitors from 2011 to 2016 for the first time in 50 years, according to Jim Brennan, a senior
partner. Millennials coming.
Boston Consulting Group. The threat is everywhere. In 2018 has been a perfect storm for big food. Sales growth is stalling while oil, freight, raw materials, steel, and aluminum costs rise. In the past, inflation wouldn't have been a major issue for these legacy brands. Their size, supply chain, and enormous TV advertising budgets allowed them to muscle out competitors and maintain higher prices. Quote, you didn't have tons of competition and the superior economics just continued, Brennan said. It was a pretty nice gig. But they don't have that luxury anymore. Their business models and pricing power are crumbling as the retail and grocery industries consolidate, consumers' allegiances fade, and low-budget digital advertising campaigns sway shoppers. Amazon, Walmart, Target, Kroger are waging a price war that has spread to the rest of the retail and grocery industry. The pricing battle has changed shoppers' expectations of how much a box of cereal or a bar of soap costs. If suppliers don't play ball on prices, Walmart can put products in the back of the store where shoppers can't find them. Amazon can sell them to the bottom of its search pages. The growth of retailers' cheaper private labels and discount stores like Dollar General, Dollar Tree, and Germany's Aldi have limited big players' ability to raise prices. Amazon, for example, is building out a stable of its own food and household essentials. It launched Wag, a dog food line, earlier this month. Mass-produced brands are not only the only game in town anymore. Scale is less important in the digital age when an entrepreneur with a new idea can reach a huge audience online through a viral ad on YouTube or Facebook. Amazon provides a valuable platform for small brands to gain traction. Household care products have also been caught flat-footed. Clorox, Procter & Gamble, Kimberly-Clark, and Colgate-Palmolive are each down 20% this year as investors question their strategies. Nimble players have undercut big brands' prices and tailored their marketing to fresher organic trends. Analysts point to Kind and RX Bar Snacks, La Croix Sparkling Water, Halo Top Ice Cream, Dollar Shave Club Razors, and 7th Generation Laundry Detergent as examples of startups that have capitalized on shoppers' preference for natural ingredients in food and household care products. These companies have attempted to reshape their lineups and scoop up new arrivals to boost sales, that's really the technique here. Over the past year, General Mills bought pet food company Blue Buffalo for $8 billion. Campbell acquires Snyder-Lance Snacks for $5 billion. And Hershey purchased Skinny Pop popcorn maker Amplify Snack Brands for $1.6 billion. And 2 weeks ago, Oreo maker Mondelez bought Tate's Cookies for $500 million. But corporate shopping sprees are not enough. And not one mention in the entire article of millennials.
Really? I saw it coming. Me too. I felt like I could hear it.
I would have got at least five mentions of it there. Not one. So you see that? That's a pretty... Those drops are very significant. And a lot of the drop isn't about sales numbers. It's about confidence in the future of the companies.
But, yeah, because sales numbers and stock prices are not always the same.
Hand in hand, no.
Yeah.
But your CEO steps down. You have no answer to what's happening. La Croix has just come ripping across the industry of the... sparkling beverage. I haven't had it.
It's just water.
Although,
I mean, it's sparkling water.
I did have Diet Coke Mandarin Orange a few days ago.
I
did not like it.
No, that's because it's gross.
Yeah. But those products are selling.
I do
well.
Think like a trend of like local and organic and healthy and things like this, 7th Generation, like, which is not a new company, by the way. It's been around for a long time. The 7th Generation cleaning products and stuff like that. I think we have more access to it with social than, like, if you couldn't afford to buy a TV commercial, people weren't going to know about your brand. But now social lets you have that access. So I do think that changes. But it's not, in some ways, that's an excuse from big companies saying, we've always done it this way. So instead of launching our own healthier, safer, better products, we're going to stick with the condensed soup in the can. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's kind of twofold, right? They can buy people and acquire them, but there's also a sort of like a ego or a size thing where you think, we'll be fine. They're just small companies. But they also could adapt in what they offer people, which I think would be helpful. Or acquire. Just buy the small companies up and offer their products and stuff. But
it's what we always talk about, that innovation is always happening outside of a company.
Yeah.
Because they're set in their way. Especially when the bigger the leader you are, the less willing you are to adapt to new things.
I mean, we're still eating and we're still buying food in stores. And we're still like... So, I mean, I
and we're spending more.
Yeah, and we're spending more. And we're not buying less if we're buying it online. And the price war thing, that's not new. Like,
yeah.
They have... Blaming Amazon and Walmart for things isn't a new blame. Like, that's like old school, right?
But labels have mattered less. Like, the brands have mattered less now. Yeah. We're willing to take more of a chance. Right? We trust inherent brands less now.
Or the no-name stuff. Like,
yeah.
Whole Foods has their own brand, which
is that whole
really
brand
great.
That came out, which was all grooming products and cosmetic products that had no label. The label was no label.
Yeah.
It was not like No Frills. It was just like blank. And that was their whole pitch. It's like there's nothing here.
So we might care less about that now.
Right. Well, and that's hopefully that's a good thing, right? Where you have a lot of different industries have their just like white labeled items, like, you know, the glasses industry is just stamping a Louis Vuitton logo on or something else when they're all the same manufacturer and stuff. So less reliant on labels, I think, is a good thing. And less reliant on gatekeepers where a store shelf depicts or defines who we shop from. versus what's the best one or what's the best for us, best tasting, best price.
And more competition with online shopping. You're right. Able to get access to a lot more products that you weren't able to get access to before.
Exactly. Woo! Good eats right there.
Yeah,
that
there's
show.
A lot of food talking.
And our made-up word this week is the Unpodcast.
That's a really good made-up word.
Always remember, folks, the best made-up word in the world is our actual name of our show.
I have no idea what it means. Maybe. Apparently, it means cooking things in the dishwasher stories.
Boom. You're welcome for that episode, folks. Hopefully, we'll have you next
Enjoy
week.
Enjoy your mason jar chicken.
Bye-bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.